Hey, what's up, everybody? My name's MJ, and you're listening to the MTG in Quarantine podcast. As usual, I'd like to give a quick shout-out before we begin to my local game store, Guardian Games. You can find Guardian Games on the web at ggportland.com. I'd also like to utilize this opportunity to give a huge shout-out and thank you to the awesome people who supported me over at patreon.com/MTGinQuarantine. So a huge thank you to Mr. Big Bence, Anomaly, Draco Lucian, Neo Royal, Nick S, Infamous Fridge, Frugal Brutal, and Jen of the Filthy MTG Casuals for supporting the show. If you'd like to help support the show and help me make more awesome content, head on over to patreon.com/MTGinQuarantine for more information. So, as y'all have really found out over the last couple of months, I've really been getting into CDH more, and today's episode is no different. Today we're going to have a very, very interesting topic that's actually really close to my heart here, but before I get to the rest of today's episode, I have to introduce today's guest. So, without further ado, he's the host of the Arena of the Ancients game stream and amazing cat dad to Baloney, introducing at long last Mr. Fitz. Welcome to the show.
Hey, how's it going, MJ?
It's going all right. It's been forever since we started talking about having you on the stream, and I was finally able to get you on here.
Hell yeah, it took a little bit of back and forth. We got there.
Definitely, definitely. So before we get to the rest of the episode here, Fitz, could you give a quick shout out to your game stream, Arena of the Ancients, just in case the listeners out there aren't familiar with it?
Yeah, for sure. I'm the host of Arena of the Ancients, a Twitch channel that does competitive and casual Commander with a variety of friends and community members just focused on having a good time.
For sure, for sure. Yeah, I think I was on there, like 3-4 weeks ago, at least from when we were recording this. We had an interesting game with you, myself, Peter, and Gabe Icetep on there. Was that correct? I think my memory's correct.
It was a couple weeks ago, three or four. I can't remember now.
Something like that. But yeah, we had a lot of fun on that like one. All right, so again, at the top of the show, Fitz, you and I were talking about CDH, and an interesting topic that has really come to mind, especially through my own personal experience, is kind of trying to not only define necessarily what fringe CDH is versus, I would say, like tier one CDH, or if we wanted to get into that, but really the topic for today is how do you bring a more casual deck into CDH. So again, the listeners out there, if you've been following along what I've been doing, and Fitz knows this, I've been trying to work for months to try to bring my Alenda the Duskrose deck up to fringe level CDH. Obviously, it's not quite top tier because I'm making some stylistic changes. There are some colors missing that might, you know, push it over the top. Obviously, I'm not running blue. That makes a huge difference. But just trying to bring a higher level, more optimized deck into CDH can be kind of daunting, especially if you've never really played CDH before or if you've never really brewed before. And I really wanted to talk to you today, Fitz, about your own experience, actually, trying to bring a more optimized casual deck into the fringe territory of CDH. So do you want to tell the listeners a little bit out there, a little bit more about this deck that you're talking about, and then we'll basically kind of just jump into this whole conversion process from casual to competitive.
Yeah, for sure. The deck that one of my favorite commanders ever, and I will play anywhere I can, is Unet Cryptic Sovereign. And I have a really strong version of that deck, but it's nowhere near CDH, and I wanted to make another version of Unet that would be at the very least, give people a run for their money.
Before we get any further, could you quickly read out what Yannette does, just in case some of the listeners out there are unfamiliar with this card?
For sure. She's 2WB for a 3/5 with flying, vigilance, and menace. Whenever Yannette attacks, you reveal the top card of your library. If it is an odd mana value, you may cast it without paying its mana cost. Otherwise, you draw a card. And because she can cast odd mana value things for free, some of the really good ones in CDH are Peer into the Abyss and Ad Nauseam. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of when I was like, well, if she can at least get either of those cards off my library for free in an environment where you're playing a lot of top deck tutors, seems like I could be able to set up some easy wins.
Definitely. So, yeah, could you quickly walk us through exactly what your deck is trying, the high-powered casual version is trying to do, and then explain how you would make some tweaks to that deck and the game plan, potentially, if you are, to try to bring it more up to Fringe CDH level?
Oh, yeah, for sure. My my high-power one is built around the card Doomsday, where you exile your whole library and graveyard, make a little five-card mini-library. Mm-hmm. And it tries to win through that card usually, like with Nexus of Fate and stuff. This deck, when I move it up to CDH, I'm not doing that because it's really really fragile. And because you're in blue and black, I'm focused on some of the most powerful win cons like Demonic Consultation and Thassa's Oracle. I have Heliod Ballista, Heliod Suncrown, and Walking Ballista, mm-hmm. and Dramatic Scepter, Ice Crown Scepter, and Dramatic Reversal to give me infinite mana and untap all my non-land permanents.
Yep.
Are the deck's primary ways to win.
Okay, yeah, so you're definitely choosing some of the most popular, at least, or some of the most busted, I guess, ways to win in CDH, depending on how you look at it. And yeah, it definitely makes sense that Doomsday is a little bit fragile. I've noticed just in my own looks at the deck database that outside of Curic, Doomsday doesn't show up as much as it used to.
Yeah, it's just if you like got you're like committing to Doomsday once you resolve it, and if it goes wrong, then you're probably going to lose the game.
I mean, I could say the same thing about when I mulled the three on a Godo hand, but, you know, we're not talking about that here. We're talking about just, you know, trying to bring this deck up. Okay, Fitz. So now that we've discussed a little bit about what Urionet deck, the high-powered version, the high-powered casual version anyway, is trying to do, and what you're going to do for the CDH version, can you walk us through some of the steps you're taking to try to bring that up to CDH? What are some of the cards you're keeping in the deck as it is currently, and what are some of the cards that you're going to be jettisoning for different cards? And then, obviously, on the flip side of that coin, what are some of the cards you're going to be adding to replace those pieces?
Yeah, my high power one's also an odd CMC only deck, so a lot of that stuff had to go. Three mana rocks that aren't that's just not really going to provide you the value you need in competitive. So all of those went out. I added like the fast mana package, you know, Mana Crypt, Mana Vault, you know, Jeweled Lotus, Grim Monolith, like those types of cards to make sure that you can accelerate your game plan fast enough.
Uh-huh.
The deck did get to keep some things like Rhystic Study and Mystic Remora, but a lot of the card draw I changed because it was just not going to provide the velocity for the mana investment I was putting into it. And then I added like any top deck tutor I wasn't already running, like the one from Portal. Oh, why can't I think of the name of it?
Well, I mean, you're going to be running
Imperial Seal. There we go.
Imperial Seal, thing, even Mystical Tutor, Enlightened Tutor, which you can also cast off the top with Yennet's ability because they're both one mana. Yeah, Vampiric Tutor, obviously, since that's one mana. Yeah, I mean, the fact you can just rip those off the top or just use them for one mana just makes them... And since you're playing the three best colors for tutors for what you're trying to do, yeah, it works real well.
Yeah, it helps negates, like, Yennet's not a super powerful commander. She's five to deploy, takes a turn to do anything in CDH. So I'm trying to, you know, get value where I can and then make sure when I do get a user, it's really explosive.
Mm-hmm. Definitely reminds me of kind of my Alenda deck. It's like things need to go just right for this commander to really go off. But if that one thing happens, it'll be really, really cool. So I hear you on that one. Anyway, so again, now that we've discussed a little bit more about that deck, some of the things you're putting in there, some of the things you're taking out, let's really get to the meat of today's episode. And that's going to be the whole process, the concept of bringing a casual deck into CDH or, you know, Fringe CDH. And I guess that really begs the question, first and foremost, why you're trying to bring a more optimized casual deck into Fringe CDH. Obviously, here it's just because you get a different, at least the way I look at it, is you get a different way to play the game. In your case here, you're changing the win cons in a lot of cases for your deck entirely to try to bring it up to par with more CDH decks. And so you're in some ways altering the deck completely, but you're still kind of keeping that same feel to it. And that's what's really interesting about Fringe, especially, is you don't necessarily need to potentially jettison the cards you're using. You just need to make some strategic changes, move some things around, and see what happens. I feel like Fringe is kind of the testing ground for new decks that they're not quite to full CDH, but they're not quite high-powered casual, you know?
Oh yeah, I agree. Like, my high-powering net deck is very powerful, and it wins sometimes, like, in the first few turns, like, under turn five, but that's not, like, operating on the same axis as a competitive deck, like the CADH version I have built. But it still is, I'm still running some of my like pet cards in that deck. Like, I kept an Elish Norn and Toxrill and Void Winnower because they are like, they're all odd CMC. Resolving them is just so punishing for your opponent's boards that it still feels like it's worth it to have those cards.
Yes, and for the record, Elish Norn and Toxrill are very competent CDH commanders, as demonstrated by friends of the show Beyond the Machina, as well as Charles the Mono White guy for his Elish Norn deck, which slaps in Mono White. So don't sleep on those. But yeah, those being in the 99 are extremely good, and just as they are. But yeah, in the CDH meta where you may not be able to get them off the top, for instance, they're a little bit onerous. Trying to, unless you can cheat them onto the field. So, yeah, just a lot of things you really have to think about when you're trying to bring a deck up. So, Fitz, when you are working to try to get your deck up to more fringe levels, what are some of the considerations you're putting in there that we haven't already discussed?
A lot of it's just efficiency of cards. Like, if there's a more efficient card I could be running in that slot, I'm just going to upgrade it to that and not maybe use, like I said, my net deck's odd CMC only, so that restriction means there are some cards I'm just playing that I wouldn't be looking at for CDH.
For sure. But for the fringe version, are you running some of the zero mana rocks? I would assume you probably are to be able to at least be able to ramp your net out as quickly as possible, even though you can't play them off the top of your library if the trigger goes on the stack. Just because you kind of have to.
Yeah, for sure. Like, if you aren't, you're just going to get burned for not having the fast mana. So my upgrade has a complete fast mana package.
Definitely. And I'm sure are you running Sensei's Divining Top in there too to set the top of your library?
I am. I also have Bolas's Citadels. So that's a
sweet
one life card way to draw my whole library and set up a win from there as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you definitely have the ways to be able to manipulate the top of the library. Again, you already mentioned the tutors. You have top, you have citadel, you have ways to be able to dig down, you have consultation in there, you just have so many different ways to try to be able to the cards you need that hopefully you're able to minimize the number of dead draws. And that's really, at least the way I look at it, a huge difference between even fringe CDH and more high-powered casual is there's a little less variance there. You know what you're going to get most of the time. Even if it's not necessarily the most efficient way to get there, you're still trying to optimize as much as you physically can out of a certain commander. You basically put, it's just like Spinal Tap, you know, you're trying to push that commander to 11. Doesn't mean it can necessarily get to 11, but you're definitely trying to push it past 10, and you see what happens there.
Yeah, for sure. And like, I'm playing some of the best colors. I don't have red, but still, like, all the powerful counter magic of Black's fast mana, ability to make extra mana and fast mana, like rituals. You know, you got ad nauseum. And the white cards that aren't all bad. There's still great tech like Esper Sentinel, Grand Abolisher. An early Sarah Ascendant can really impact the board, allow you to punish other ad nauseum players.
Uh-huh. Plus premium removal and Swords to Plowshares, Path to Exile, and various other cool white cards that you can play as well. Which are both one CMC as well, so it still ends up fitting in the whole theme of your removal package. Yeah, it's really cool what you've built here, Fitz, and I'll definitely have to take a chance playing against it sometime with my own fringe deck, because it's just it. Fringe CEDH is kind of an interesting territory, again, like I just said a moment ago, because it's really the training ground, the testing ground for new decks where you're not quite sure exactly what's going to happen with them, but you want to try to optimize them as much as you can. Obviously, a lot of what CEDH is about is trying to optimize things to the nth degree, with every single card not being dead, at least when you're goldfishing things. Obviously, in the middle of a game, you will have dead cards, but the idea when you go in is, I'm going to try to get to my win condition as efficiently as possible. I feel like Fringe, while you are trying to optimize your deck, also does provide you that little bit of freedom to say, hey, either my commander doesn't necessarily help me win the game, or if it does, it's not quite as efficient, let's say, as some of the other CEDH decks that we play. You mentioned Tim Necrom, which, again, is just value, oozing value. I play Godo, which is, you know, just count to 11 and win. I talked to Ryan on Playing with Power. Yeah, a couple of weeks ago about Godo. It's like, you know, this is super simple. Just do this thing, turn sideways, win. And Fringe really isn't as much like that, I feel. I feel like it's kind of a sandbox, if you will, to really just be able to try out non-traditional strategies, try out weird little things, and just see how they work. Not everything's going to stick, but it feels kind of like the mad scientist area, I guess, of CEDH, really, if you're just not quite sure how something will work, how an interaction will work. And you kind of know that when you get in there. I think that's why Fringe really exists. And that's not to say you can't really do the mad scientist thing with CEDH, just, you know, full top tier. I mean, obviously, Chrom, you know, mad scientist. You get where I'm going here, but
yeah, I hear you.
But I really like Fringe personally because it's allowed me to really play around with my Alenda, or, you know, sometimes when Timna and Tevish Zot are at the helm of that exact same deck, depending on exactly what I'm trying to get out of it while I'm playtesting. It allows me, I think, the freedom to kind of bring more of my playstyle, my more casual way of building EDH decks into CEDH and just really see what sticks and then make some changes, find out what works, find out what doesn't work. Like right before the show, I was talking to you, Fitz, about trying to figure out how to maximize my card draw since I'm only in Orzhov colors, and white's not overly great at drawing cards, as a lot of people have pointed out, unfortunately. And black, again, it kind of depends on what you're trying to get out of it. And you know, you're not always going to draw the cards you need, so how can you try to consistently find what you need? And just tinkering around with that in a, I guess, a little less pressurized environment in Fringe versus full-tier CEDH, where everything is just go, go, go all the time. I feel like Fringe is go, 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 but also maybe allows you to play a few pet cards and some maybe slightly less optimized card choices. I don't know, maybe others feel like this is different. Again, this is just my opinion. I'm just kind of explaining how Fringe, what Fringe means to me anyway, just as a more casual brewer who's basically tried to break into CEDH just by creating my own homebrew.
Yeah, I feel you. I mostly agree with what you're saying. Like, my deck, I would play against most meta decks. I'm probably not going to present super early wins, like turn two or three or anything. But probably turn four a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. Plus, I'm playing Consult and Oracle, and sure, that's a very powerful combo that can be hard to interact with, and both pieces are easy to find.
And you can pull that off pretty much with any level of deck, honestly. You don't need to necessarily have the rest of the 99 be perfect. Sometimes you just need to have those two cards in hand and have the right timing to be able to pull it off, even if your deck is maybe not quite, you know, I'm putting scare quotes up, as good as your opponent's decks. You can still kind of pull a win out from nowhere if your timing is right, if you have the right cards and things just go your way. So yeah, I definitely see where you're going with that. Is that it just on any given day, your deck can definitely keep up with the more meta decks.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I agree. Like, you're not always going to get lucky, but for the most part, you're going to be in the thick of things.
Sure. And that's definitely all about the card choices, too. Is I feel like my Fringe deck could at least stay relevant in a CEDH game versus meta decks. It's probably not going to win. I haven't won with it yet in a CEDH game, but I think with time, hope, and some more practice with it, hopefully I can bring it up to a level where it can at least be relevant throughout most games. And that's really kind of where I want it to be. It's just, it was always a thought experiment from the get-go. And again, I'm not expecting it to be the best deck, but it's just kind of cool to see how it evolves, how I get better as a brewer, and be able to utilize that as a chance to just test out my own deck building skills and just see where it goes. So this just seems like the very logical progression for me personally. Yeah,
for sure. And like with any brew in a more higher power or fringe or even CDH space, you're always iterating on the deck, right? Like that's not, like I said before we started the show, you're not going to like draft up your first 100 cards and then just like triple sleeve it. Like deck never needs a change.
Oh yeah. I mean, I don't even double sleeve my decks. or if J-Ro's out there listening, he doesn't even sleeve the vast majority of his decks. So, yeah.
He was telling me about that when he played on my stream yesterday. I was just like, oh, I got like 60 decks on the table, not in sleeves. And I was just like, ooh.
Yeah.
Brave but, man.
But J-Ro's awesome. Definitely shout out to him over on Twitter at @coach_J_Rowe. If you're interested in checking out all the stuff that he does, including his podcast, Quote of Arms, I am unabashedly sponsoring my friend's episodes here because they're awesome. You should definitely check them out. And anyway, yeah, back to the topic here. So now that we've really talked about this, Fitz, let's just do a thought experiment here. What I really like about these CDH episodes that I do here is not only am I trying to help my listeners out there who are, you know, maybe kind of hesitant about getting into CDH, or maybe because they just are kind of afraid of the combos, or they don't know how, or maybe they had a bad experience, let's say. I hope that's not the case, but you never know. And I want them to learn as much as I am. It's just really nice to be able to kind of break down the process, kind of break down some of those barriers to entry to CDH if they exist. So let's just do a thought experiment here where I am completely new to CDH. I know really nothing about the meta, anything, and I have an optimized casual deck that's just sitting around, and I want to bring it up to CDH, but I don't really know how to do that. Since you're very knowledgeable about CDH here, Fitz, how would you walk me through the process of taking my deck towards more fringe or, you know, full tier CDH play?
The first step I would do is tell you to cut a bunch of lands and put a bunch of fast mana in your deck. That's usually the first major stepping stone between like a high power casual deck and a fringe one or a CDH one. Most aren't running like Mox Diamond and like Mox Opal, Chrome Mox, Mana Crypt, Grim Monolith, that sort of stuff.
Yeah. So let's talk about the lands for a moment here. You just mentioned that you're going to be cutting down lands. And for instance, my fringe deck has 30 lands in it, whereas normally in a casual deck, I'm going to be running so anywhere from 35 to 37 lands. Is there really a rule of thumb for of what kind of lands you probably should be running a CDH deck, or is it really deck dependent?
Well, like it is a little deck dependent, because if you're playing the card Tainted Pact, your mana base has to be Singleton. It can't have any lands with the same name. So that's the most deck dependent one. But otherwise, it's just prioritizing, you know, duels, fetches, lands that do not enter the battlefield tapped.
And so how would colorless lands like Ancient Tomb fit into this, especially if you're going for like 3 or 4, 5 color decks?
You just play it. There's no opportunity cost other than your life points, and that doesn't really matter most of the time.
Fair enough.
It makes you 2 mana every single turn.
Fair enough. Hopefully you won't kill yourself with Mana Crypt later on. But again, that's a whole another story right there. So
and that's pretty unlikely.
Yeah, definitely. So now that you're down to 27 to about 30 lands, is that about accurate?
Yeah, I don't really play less than 29. I get kind of cold feet about that.
For sure.
You see a lot of real bad openers, and I don't like that.
For so sure.
29, 30 is kind of in my sweet spot lately, but I'm greedy. I want lots of mana rocks and rituals.
Wait, you mean you, so you're trying to tell me that CDH players build their decks greedily? This is news to me, Fitz. I've never heard of this.
Never.
But never. Yeah.
Just like never mull the three. That never happens in CDH.
Yeah, well, I wish you told me that prior to last week, because I feel really stupid about leaving that. Oh man, that was embarrassing, honestly. But enough about that. Enough about my turn none Godo, as I call it, the debacle. So now that we have a land base here with your shocks, your fetches, your dual lands, your really good utility lands like your Ancient Tombs, your Command Towers, Exotic Orchards, Forbidden Orchards, things like that, and you have your fast mana, what is the next step to trying to tweak that optimized casual deck up to a more fringe CDH level?
I would say, how compact are the win conditions in your high-powered casual deck? Like, are they like two or three cards or more, if they're more? And how can you add other compact win conditions to the deck that are like two to three cards?
Yeah, so could you walk us through an example or two of this?
For sure. A compact win condition that's very common in CDH, and we've talked about already, it's Demonic Consultation and the card Thassa's Oracle.
Yeah. So could you walk us through that really quickly, exactly how the interaction works?
For sure. Demonic Consultation is a one black mana instant that says, name a card, remove the top six cards of your library from the game, and reveal the next card to all players. If it's the name card, you put it in your hand. So you just name a card that's not in your deck.
Okay.
And it will exile your entire library. And then Thassa's Oracle says, when it enters the battlefield, if you have Devotion greater than the number of cards in your library, you win the game, which will be zero.
Okay, yeah, so you just win the game right on the spot.
Yeah.
And yeah, from experience, this is an extremely popular win condition. And it's really easy to assemble.
And it can come out of nowhere. It can surprise you. It doesn't take a lot of mana to execute.
Yeah, and again, it, just like you mentioned, it is just two cards. So instead of trying to go a roundabout way of trying to get to, let's say, the old style lab man win, where all of a sudden, yes, it does work with consultation too, but it still requires another step. Because you still need to draw a card with Lab Man or with War of the Spark Jace versus Thassa's Oracle. It just, bam, hits the table, trigger, response, you win the game, if no one has any responses.
Yeah, for sure. It's very hard to interact with. And it being on an end of the battlefield effect, it makes it very challenging to stop Thassa's Oracle.
Oh, definitely. Unless people are running a bunch of... Actually, I don't even know if a Stifle effect could stop that.
Yeah, Stifle would stop it. Because it's a triggered ability, but it's such a... Stifle's a narrow card.
Oh, it totally is.
And I like my counter magic to be flexible.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and so another, now... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, another example of a good combat win condition I added to the this unit deck was Heliod Suncrowned and Walking Ballista.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's just one... You only need two cards... Heliod is an odd CMC, so I could even cast him for free if that just happened, if it lucked out that way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's since they're both creatures, it is another combo that can be kind of hard to interact with, where a lot of CDH decks prioritize interaction on the stack over interaction on the battlefield or creatures.
Okay, so how, again, since we just mentioned the Heliod Ballista combo, how does that work?
Okay, Heliod says, whenever you gain life, you put a 1/1 counter on target creature or enchantment you control. And for one and a white, it gives a creature lifelink. So if you play a Walking Ballista with two counters on it, you'll remove a counter to deal one damage to a player. Heliod will refund the counter, and you can continue until the table's dead.
Gotcha. Very simple combo, kind of like the Spike Feeder Archangel of Thune combo in a way, sort of, just you're killing your opponents.
Yeah.
Instead of just getting infinite amounts of counters and whatnot. Yeah, it's a very efficient combo because, again, Walking Ballista is really nice because you can also use any sort of artifact tutors you may have in the deck. So you don't necessarily have... I mean... And yeah, Enlightened Tutor will get it, Mystical Tutor won't, but there are various blue artifact tutors that you can use to go find it if you absolutely have to.
Yeah, for sure. And Walking Ballista also is just an infinite mana outlet. If you have infinite mana, it just wins the game on its own.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, Ballista's just a really flexible card in CDH. You don't necessarily have to utilize the Heliod combo, but yeah, Ballista just slots into any deck where you can just have that be that fail-safe, as you just mentioned there, where if you just get infinite mana, you win the game. And that's really nice for any deck in any colors. It doesn't have to be in white, doesn't have to be in blue. It could be in one of your Gruul decks. If you can just get infinite mana, Walking Ballista wins.
Yeah, like I said earlier, it's a creature, so it's harder for people to interact with. If you get it on the table, it's over. Like, it'd be really hard to stop you.
Mm-hmm. Maybe a little bit easier to blow up because you will have the Abrade-type effects. Mog Salvage will blow it up because it is an artifact creature, so I guess it kind of comes with a bit of a downside. But hopefully you have ways to be able to protect your Ballista combo, no matter what you're trying to do with it.
Yeah, for sure. Anytime you're trying to go for it in CDH, it is best to bring protection.
Oh, definitely. And I think that's another huge thing that's very different from more casual games, is that in a lot of more casual games, when someone is going off, you don't necessarily need to have a counterspell or ways to protect what you're trying to do in your hand. You can potentially just try to go off and hope that it works out. In CDH, you really need to make sure, if you don't have a backup plan of a counterspell or something like that, you've already set up your board a turn or two in advance, if possible, that you really need to be on your game before you try to go off, because if you do one thing wrong, depending on the deck, you can really screw yourself over.
Yeah, absolutely. Or you're going to create a situation where people are going to try and stop you, and then the next player wins.
Yeah, exactly. You not only hurt yourself, but then you also just hand the game to someone else. So yeah, it's a very complicated side of things. I've really struggled to learn timing, and it's definitely something that I know I'll get better with time. But at the very beginning, especially when you're not the most familiar with every deck, you're still trying to, you really have to know everything about EDH and Magic in general inside and out to really understand how some of these interactions work. And it's very challenging, especially if you're very new to that end of the format.
I mean, sometimes even if you aren't, I'm not like, I don't fancy myself like a pro or anything, but I don't think I'm a bad Magic player. And even recently, I got into a stacked battle against someone, and they just like outplayed me with Dothi Voidwalker. They were trying to win. I tried to stop them. They used the Voidwalker to protect their own win with the counterspell I just previously cast. I was like, fuck. Mm-hmm. they were going to win either way. I tried to stop them, and it didn't work.
So yeah,
it's just, definitely. There's a lot of information, a lot of cognitive load you're taking on sometimes. It's easy to make a mistake.
Oh, for sure. That's one of the huge things that has been an obstacle for me personally, is just trying to know when do you hold them, when do you fold them? Sometimes in CDH, I think that's a very apt way to look at it, is when do you play the cards in your hand, when do you decide to pass the turn, what do you hold up, when do you hold it up, and what should you try to deal with, what is okay to let go? A lot of those sorts of interactions that you may not necessarily have as much of in casual, depending on the situation, but are in EDH, are essential to being able to try to win the game.
Oh yeah, I definitely agree. It's a lot of like, and you learn too, like the first time I played against a Karkashima deck, I just didn't know when to interact, and then it won the game. And I was like, okay, learn from that experience, always kill Kark.
Oh, yeah. I just had Ken from Stacked EDH and Scoop Phase on a month or two ago talking about Kirk and just all the things that kind of deck could do. And it's terrifying. I wouldn't know what to do against that. So, yeah, more power to everyone who understands how to deal with Karkashima out there, because your illustrious host here has no idea. And I talked to the one of the progenitors of that deck. So... anywho, now let's get back to the rest of the topic here. So we've talked about lands, we've talked about fast mana, we've talked about having compact combos if possible, or again, if you're playing a stacks deck, maybe you don't have a combo, but having a compact win condition. now that you have all of those pieces in place, Fitz, what's next? How do you fill out the rest of the 99 of your hypothetical fringe brew?
For me, it'd be the interaction suite, and then card advantage and tutors would be the last two things we're really going for. And that would be a good chunk of the rest of the deck, honestly. I prefer like pushing 20 pieces of interaction, and then with my last couple decks, I'm going about 10-ish tutors, if I can fit that many in, and then the rest would just be some card advantage, and then I have about 10 slots left over after those packages are added, where I'll add like a little bit of spice, a little bit of and utility cards.
Is this where in more fringe EDH versions you might throw in, again, maybe not a pet card, but something that may not necessarily be the most optimal, but just something a little different? Something that maybe is high risk, high reward?
Yeah, this like in those like those last 10 slots I'm talking about is where, for my Annette deck, as an example, I put the Void Winnower and the Toxrill and the Elish Norn type cards.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. They're powerful on their own. They may not necessarily be what we consider the best card choices, again, if we want to use the scare quotes on that. But again, if they do resolve, if they do land, they will have a devastating effect. So you're taking some chances here, but honestly, that's what CDH is always about. It's taking a lot of chances and trying to land your haymakers as quickly, as efficiently as possible. So that's why you throw them in there, right?
Yeah, exactly. And like, they're cards I love. I love me an Elish Norn and a Void Winnower. They aren't always the funnest cards to play in casual. So, you know, Aninette can cheat them out. So mm-hmm. I was like, yeah, why not?
You're a monster, Fitz. Oh, man. But yeah, having played against many Elish Norns in my day here is in more casual circles, it's terrible to deal with. But yeah, in CDH, it's just everything's hold barred. No holds barred. You just really go well. And that's not to say you can't play Elish Norn in casual. It's definitely a very good card. It's just that when you run a lot of token decks and more Battlecruiser-y decks or brews that I do, Elish Norn kind of shuts those off. So I don't like it when I'm playing against it, but it's fun to drop one. It's fun to play, yeah. An Elish Norn. It's like, yeah, +2, +2, pew, pew, pew. And then on the other side, it just, no.
Yeah, and then the other side, you stuff all their creatures in the graveyard, and they're sad about it.
Yeah.
But that doesn't really stop me from playing Elish Norn in casual.
Oh, man. No. It's an objectively good card, and it's one of the reasons why, yeah, you know, Elish Norn is removed. Kind of remove on site for a reason. It's just a really good card.
Yeah, for sure. I think all Praetors kind of are. But
definitely.
She usually just like, she just takes away a lot of stuff when she shows up. And in CDH, it's probably everyone's board state. Mm-hmm. There aren't too many things that live through an Elish Norn.
Yeah, because you're wiping away a lot of mana dorks. You're wiping away a lot of small utility creatures. A lot of combo pieces also get taken off the board with Elish Norn, too. I'm looking at you, Leon and Relic Warder. You and your Bomberman combo there. Or Aurex Salvagers maybe can get through that, but yeah, the Relic Warder can't.
Yeah, it's just hard to deal with.
Yeah, and Toxrill is kind of in that same vein, too, is that if you're able to land Toxrill, you are just destroying everybody's boards, especially the creature-heavy metas or creature-heavy decks. It kind of shuts Najeel off in a way, depending on when you land Toxrill. Winota gets hurt really badly, too. Just any deck, Marwyn gets turned off. Just so many creature-based decks, Toxrill just takes a dump on.
Oh, yeah, and it's like you get, also the output is better than Elish Norn, I think, because you get bodies that you can make in a card draw later on if you mm-hmm. need to.
Oh, yeah. Toxrill is a house. And for all the listeners out there, I will be trying to get an episode on a Toxrill list here real soon for everyone to listen, so you too can hear about Slug Cult and get involved in that one too. So that to me, I've played against a couple of Toxrill decks. Again, shout out to friend Beyond the Machina for that one, for basically destroying, for ripping, systematically ripping my deck apart with Toxrill. But you're not salty about it because it's just so dang cool to see it go off, even as all your creatures just wither and die before you. So Yeah, fun times with Talkspell. But yeah, so that's basically the guts of building a fringe deck. Again, before we end here, Fitz, is there really anything else you'd like to talk about as far as trying to bring an optimized casual deck up to fringe level?
Yeah, when you first start iterating on the deck to make it into like a fringe deck or competitive deck, you're probably going to lose a lot at first. And that's just like part of the learning experience. I think like Magic players in general in Commander don't like to lose. And while I get that, it's like an important thing to like take your losses and think on what you could have done better or what cards didn't perform the way you expected them to.
Mm-hmm.
So you know where you start to see your weaknesses and how you can improve your deck.
Yeah, because I spend a lot of time, at least when I'm thinking about it, tinkering around with my Alenda deck. I'm trying to figure out, okay, some of these cards have really underperformed for me. A lot of times, maybe I don't have the 3 black mana for Necropotence. And I know out there somewhere Skylar is screaming whenever I mention Necropotence. So I should say Necropotence a third time, right? For something crazy.
Yeah, they're not very, very hot on that card, but I am. I love me a Necropotence.
Yeah, it's just not great when you don't have 3 black mana to get out until like turn 4 or 5, in which case all of a sudden you basically paint yourself into a corner. I think that's what keeps happening with my deck personally, is unless I have the black mana out immediately to be able to cast it, I don't know if I can necessarily hang on long enough to get Necro online. So it's one of those things where I guess that's kind of a poster child personally, is okay, figure out, all right, do I want to keep this in the list or do I want to go something else? Do I want to try to run Adnaz in my deck potentially to get the cards that I need? Do I want to run Tainted Pact as a, maybe not as a combo piece, but as a way to, as kind of a weird little tutor if I need it for card advantage? Do I want to keep running Necropotence or do I want to try to find other avenues to get to my card draw and tutors and whatnot? So it's that interesting never-ending process of trying to figure out exactly how to make my deck as good as I want it to be able to. And obviously that's not to say you're ever really going to get it there, but it's honestly, Fitz, since the first time I sent this deck list over to you, it's undergone a lot of changes, and I think it's a lot better than it was just a couple months ago when you first took a look at this.
Oh yeah, for sure. Like, it's, if your aim of your like deck building process is to keep making it better, I think one of the better things to do is talk to other people about it. Like, you're only like one person. Other people's viewpoints are very useful.
Oh yeah, I mean, I had at least 5 people who I talked with at length about this deck. So shout out to Dan over Moderately Anonymous, Scoots. Let's see, who else did I think Scoop Phase. I talked to this with John Gemstone Mine and with you, Fitz, and a few other people as well. I did talk to Nathan about this a little bit on various things as well. So just all, and I know I'm forgetting some people out there. So again, if my CDH folks are out there listening to this, know that I'm not forgetting you. It's just been a few months, so I'm sure you've all talked to me about this deck at one time or another. So thank you so much for giving me some ideas. This deck is obviously not done yet, but it's getting closer. I like where it's going, and I think that's really the big takeaway from all this, is it's getting closer to that fringe deck that I really wanted to build. So thank you, Fitz, for taking the time to take a look at that list and help me try to round it into shape.
Hey, no problem, MJ.
Yeah, at some point I will try to get this deck into a shape where I will play it against you, and I will hopefully, the deck will actually do something. It may not win, but it'll do something really cool.
I look forward to that, man. I always got a spot at my table for you.
All right, sounds good. Maybe out there you'll see me on Arena of the Ancients at some point playing some CDH, throwing down with some CDH at some time with some cool people and playing some pretend wizard card games and just having a good time, because that's why we're here, right?
Hell yeah.
All right, and speaking of Arena of the Ancients here, I think we've reached the end of today's episode. Thank you so much, Fitz, for taking the time to be on here. And where can people find Arena of the Ancients if they want to find your streams or the rest of your content?
twitch.tv/ArenaOfTheAncientsMTG. I stream every Saturday and Sunday at around 3 p.m. Pacific.
And you got a new logo, right?
I do. It was designed by Sequera.
Nice.
Who brewed this? featuring Baloney's beautiful face.
It's a really cool logo. You should definitely go check that out if you haven't seen it already. All right, and if you're interested in hearing any of the CDH content I've done in the past or just any of the back catalog of the MTG in Quarantine podcast, you can find those on the usual podcast outlets. That's your Google, Apple, Spotify, Player FM, Rocket Cast, Pocket Cast, and CastBox, Overcast, and a whole bunch of other podcast outlets. I never remember all of them, but if it's a major podcast outlet, odds are you can find my back catalog there. You can also find me on Twitter at MTG in Quarantine. Post about a whole lot of really cool things, just, you know, calls out, casting calls for people to do various CDH episodes or just, you know, various other cool community things. So definitely check me out on there. If you find the happy looking Ulamog wearing a pair of headphones, you found the right place. I'd also like to utilize this opportunity to give another huge shout out and thank you to all the awesome people who support me over at patreon.com/MTGInQuarantine. So another huge shout out to Mr. Big Bence, Anomaly, Draco Lucian, Neo Royal, Nick S, Infamous Fridge, Frugal Brutal, and Jen of the Filthy MTG Casuals for supporting the show. If you'd like to help support the show and help me make more awesome content, head on over to patreon.com/MTGInQuarantine. And I hope you enjoyed this episode of the MTG in Quarantine podcast. My name's MJ. Have a great rest of your day, everybody.